Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. No, we don't. We don't tolerate sponsors. No commercial interruptions. We'll have none of that. So we're not doing this for the money. No. No, we're doing this because of our passionate... I lost my train of thought there. We're doing it so that my head doesn't explode and I have an opportunity to rant every week. And to hopefully enlighten and possibly even entertain you people who we love so much and we're glad to have you back. At least our friends. Not so much our enemies. Well, we love our enemies enough to give them the time of day. To care about them enough, but let's just move on. I should just do the regular standard introduction. Why am I trying to get creative? That's the last thing you want to try to do. Go and get creative. All right. Anyway, so are you telling me seriously that the best the Democrat Party can come up with is Joe Biden? Are you serious? We are living in a bizarro world. I remember back in 2007 when Barack Obama selected Joe Biden as his running mate, a gentleman who I respected to some degree told me he had always been very impressed with Joe Biden, and he thought that Barack Obama made a great decision in selecting a man of such quality and political acumen as Joe Biden. So my opinion of this particular fellow dropped off significantly after that. I was like, you mean the guy with the hair plugs, Joe Biden? The guy who can barely stumble over his own lips and talk and just, seriously, that guy? Okay. Anyway, I made a mental note after that. This guy's not as bright as I thought, is how I end. But anyway, that's where we are. And then there's, of course, there's all the talk this week about the heartbeat bills. We're going to get to some of that later, but it's really not that big a news, in my opinion. And we'll get to some of that, though. But I want to start out with a much more pressing issue. Something, this is real kitchen table politics, right? This is stuff that really matters to most Americans. And this is a subject that I think hasn't been adequately addressed. At least not here on the Worldview. And of course, I'm talking about demons. Demons, that's right. This comes to us from the Strange Religion file, where the North Carolina Register has a dateline of Vatican City, and that's where most talk of demons originates, is right there at Vatican City. The Catholic hierarchy seems really obsessed with demons and demonic possession. In fact, they actually have exorcists, and it's not a movie. This is Dominican Father Francois Dermin. He did an interview where he explained a little bit about demons. And I was enlightened because there were some things here that I didn't realize about demons. So I felt enlightened, so I in turn want to enlighten you people. Mr. Francois Dermin is a Dominican priest and an exorcist. And he says, now he's been an exorcist for more than 25 years. He's been casting out them demons. Well, that's right. There are a lot of Protestants who are into the demons, right? With Catholics, it's demon. With the Protestants, it's demons, cast them out. They've always got a southern accent whenever they're casting them demons out. Anyway, Father Francois, he's been an exorcist for more than 25 years, and he explained that possession, right, demonic possession, that's the most popular way we perceive demons. He says possession is not a spiritual threat in the same way as temptation is. Now, apparently, he's asserting that they both come from demons. And I'm not sure I buy... Well, I'm sure I don't buy into that. Seeing as I don't buy into demonic possession. I don't even buy into demons having an active role in anything at all right now. But he says that a person who's been possessed by the devil may still become a saint someday because, he says, demonic possession of a person's body occurs without that person's knowledge or consent. The possession in and of itself does not make the victim morally blameworthy. So I remember the movie, the little girl was playing with a Ouija board and she was getting into all this spiritually dark. She seemed morally culpable to me. But then again, that was just a movie. This is real demonic possession we're talking about here. He says we might not, he says forget about possession. He says we must not undervalue the significance of temptation. It's not as spectacular as possession, but it's far more dangerous to the soul. Now, that I agree with. And now he says to resist temptation is evil. He says you must avoid the occasion of temptation. Well, how do you avoid demons? Maybe he's not asserting that. No, here's what he says. The most common manifestation of the demonic is temptation. I thought maybe he was separating out temptation, but he's lumping it all in there with the demonic. I don't ever recall being tempted by a demon. But I've been tempted by all kinds of other things. Most recently, it was pizza. But that wasn't even a sinful thing. That was just pizza. But he's now he says that temptation is demonic. But then he says to resist temptation is simple. You must avoid the occasion of temptation. So that means if you avoid the occasion of temptation, the demons can't get to you, I guess. I think he should just stop right there because that's pretty good advice all in and of itself. And you could leave out the whole demon thing. Yeah. But then it downloads a story about avoiding temptation. You put demons in the headline, people download it. So he says the next most common form of demonic activity is oppression. Yes, oppression. And we're not talking about the kind of oppression that our good friends over at Black Lives Matter are talking about. No, we're talking about health, business, or family problems which cannot be explained by natural causes. Yeah, the father says, he says that if you come to see him, he says the first, and you feel oppressed because you've got some physical problems, right? And of course, you suspect it's a demon. Because, I don't know, you're the average superstitious moron and you think it's a demon. The first thing the priest says he's going to ask you is, have you seen a doctor? He says physical problems and suffering are most often explainable by natural causes. He says, most often, he says, huh? Really, most often? How about all the time? Anyway, but good advice from the father on temptation. That's the same advice that the Apostle Paul gives in the New Testament. He says it's one of the keys, I think, to the Christian life. And I can't remember which book it's in off the top of my head, but I would suggest that you read all 13 letters that Paul wrote, and then you'll find it in there. He says, make no provision for the flesh and to satisfy the lusts thereof. And this is pretty much what the Dominican priest is saying here, except without the demons, okay? The Apostle Paul was not into a whole lot of exorcisms and demonic activity. Not a whole lot. So I'll move on from that. So there, I hope I've enlightened you and helped you with understanding a little bit more about the fantasy world of demonic possession. And I'm here to tell you that if you're tempted and you sin, it's really you. There's no demons involved. We don't need demons. We've got plenty of fleshly lusts all on our own. We don't even need demons. Now, in the meantime, let's move from demons to robots. Now, robots are real. Yes, robots are real and robots are coming. That's right. In fact, I've got a report from Bloomberg. Robots are taking over farms faster than anyone saw them coming. Yes, the first fully autonomous farm equipment is now becoming commercially available. And this is what's interesting. Industry leaders like John Deere and CNH Industrial, they're still working on their autonomous farm equipment, while little startups like Saskatchewan's Dot Technology has already sold some power platforms for mechanized spring planting in Australia this year. Another small startup, Swarm Farm Robotics, is leasing weed-killing robots that won't be affected by the Roundup. They'll be able to put it out there, and it won't cause cancer in the robots. And the robots will not bring any lawsuits. Now, I'm not so sure glyphosate causes cancer, by the way. I'm not willing to state that unequivocally. But the robots will certainly be immune from anything like that. Although someone will figure out a way to sue on behalf of the robots. There's lawyers out there working on that right now. They have an interview here with an Australian farmer named Sam. And in years past, Sam used a 120-foot-wide, 16-ton spraying machine that he says looks like a massive praying mantis in order to blanket his fields with weed-killing chemicals. But the robots from Swarm Farm that he has now, he says they're far more precise. They distinguish the dull brown color of the farm's paddock from the green foliage and target chemicals directly at the weeds. Nice. Yeah, he says if the robots work as advertised, he'll save 80% on his chemical costs. Now, you talk about a disruptive technology. Can you imagine a business expense across the board of an industry that goes down by 80%? What does that mean for the world? Incredible. It's incredible. Don't be afraid of the robots. Now, in the time that Sam the farmer doesn't have to spend out there spraying chemicals and killing weeds, he'll be able to use that time to do something creative and productive. He will not go and get in a welfare line because he's not able to work. He'll just do other things. We'll all do other things. The robots will free us to do other things. You could go and study to become an exorcist because you no longer have to fold your laundry because there's a robot for that. Or you no longer have to weed the yard. So you go to exorcism school. You don't really want to do that, no. All right, so what do we got? I think we have time. I think we have time for this one story from the Science Really file, where we're going to go to Jeff Bezos. Are you familiar with Jeff Bezos? He is the, well, he's an adulterer. I remember that. He just split up with his wife, so he's a failure in the most important thing in life. But he does have a lot of money, and he's doing other projects now that he's destroyed his marriage. And we've got a story here from FastCompany.com about Jeff Bezos wanting to save the Earth. And the story starts out like this. FastCompany.com says this, quote, "Earth is the best planet to live on in our solar system. Perhaps the only one." Comma, unquote. Perhaps, well, we've looked around pretty, at least at the solar system. We're pretty familiar. We just flew by Pluto really closely. So we've looked at them all. And I think the perhaps, I don't think that works. Anyway, well, let's get past that, though. So Earth is the best planet to live on. So to protect the Earth, Jeff Bezos wants to utilize the planet for what it does best. Keeping humans alive. And yeah, and that's Jeff Bezos is going to make sure that happens for all of us. Thank you very much, sir. What he wants to do is move heavy industry and mining into space. That's right. He wants to basically move all the dirty industries out into space. The guy's a genius. But Fast Company warns us that even the Earth itself, no matter, even if we moved all the heavy industry with all its industrial waste and toxic sludge out into Mars, Earth won't be enough to support the ballooning human population. So Bezos has a solution to that. He could say, hey, have you looked around? There's almost nothing everywhere. We've got plenty of room. We could support billions and billions and billions of more people. Let's move on and talk about other things that actually matter. But that's not what he says. He's proposing a constellation of space stations. After we've crowded the Earth, we can all go live in space stations that look like giant rotating tubes using centrifugal force to produce artificial gravity and harvest sunlight to grow crops. That's Jeff Bezos is going to make sure that the Earth sustains life. And he's going to do all that for you and I because we care a lot. Thank you. Yes, we're back. Thank you very much, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. She's always on the ball. She's always on the ball. By the way, I want to address this. Something I've been annoyed with over this past week or so is this series of reports that Tucker Carlson is doing that he calls Homeless in America. And he has dreadful music come on, and he shows a picture of some derelict sitting in a pool of his own bodily fluids. Anyway, you know, Tucker, you shouldn't call it homeless in America. So if someone is homeless, that would imply that through no fault of their own, they lost their home. Like, let's say after a tornado or a natural disaster, you could be homeless. Maybe for a night or two, if you're a decent human being, you would find somebody who would take you in. But it's not homeless in America, Tucker. It's vagrants in America. By their own decision-making processes, they've ended up on the street. They're drug addicts, alcoholics, and losers is what they are. And homelessness should not be romanticized. It should be stigmatized. You shouldn't want your kids to look at being a bum as something to be romanticized or somehow you making excuses for these bums. These are losers. All right, well, that's all. I guess I'll leave it at that. You know, every once in a while, Tucker says things that clearly indicate that this guy really doesn't understand conservatism, and he definitely does not understand Christianity. That's Tucker Carlson. I don't know. Maybe since he switched from the bow tie, he's possessed now. I don't know. It's quite possible. Tucker needs to see an exorcist. All right. Let's go now to the politics file where I downloaded this article from this website, Eureporter.com. And it's a report on the Children's Summit taking place ahead of what's the bigger summit? Let me see. There's a bigger one happening. Yes, there's the Future of Europe Summit taking place over there in Romania. The summit is organized by the National Authority on the Protection of Children's Rights and Adoption in partnership with UNICEF, Romania. And they're having their Children's Summit. They had it this past week, I should say. And the EUReporter.com reports that this is the first gathering of children under an EU presidency to urge EU leaders to make children's right to be heard a reality. I can't read that. Am I having a problem? To urge EU leaders to make children's right to be heard a reality. The right to be heard, that's a new one, huh? the right to be heard. All right, you little brat, scream your head off. You've got the right to be heard. You can't help but hear these whining little rotten children. No, they're not rotten. I shouldn't say that. It's their parents' fault. All right, so according to a survey by the EU Parliament, only 8% of children respondents feel that adults listen to their opinions when making decisions in their community. Yeah, that's because you're children. You don't know anything. If you had something constructive to offer, we would seek your advice, but you're a child. There's a reason you're in fifth grade, because you have to learn things. Anyway, the Bucharest EU Children's Declaration, an expert supporting document, was adopted on 7 May at the Children's Summit to guide European leaders. So they've had their summit, and they've adopted the Children's Declaration. And unfortunately, I don't have all the text, or I'm sure we could get into. I'm sure it would be quite entertaining to. All right. Anyway, Isaiah chapter 3. Little children will rule over you, you fools. The Europeans, there's no men left in Europe to lead Europe, and so they're looking to the children. You know, they've already utilized what few women were left who could stand up and lead, and now they're moving on to the children in the natural progression of Europe as it circles the drain. Pretty embarrassing. Now, speaking of children, I want to talk about Bill Nye. Yes, you remember Bill Nye, the science guy, right? I remember Bill Nye when I was a little kid. Well, no, I wasn't really a little kid. I was a teenager, I think, the first time I saw Bill Nye. Anyway, I was never really impressed with him because he was an evolutionist, and I always knew that was bogus. So I was never led astray by Bill Nye. But last week, Bill Nye appeared on HBO. That's right, he appeared on HBO, where, of course, he took the opportunity to use profanity. Because when people go on HBO for some reason, it seems that they cannot resist peppering their speech with profanity because they're on HBO and it's allowed. So Bill Nye, his entire career is built on educating children about true science. And he goes on HBO, and let's see, he uses the F word twice and then the MF word once. So it's really, really impressive. Yeah, he was talking about the Green New Deal and how it was. He says, by the end of this century, if emissions keep rising, the average temperature on Earth could go up another 4 to 8 degrees. And then he uses the F word because he's on HBO, thinks it's cool. Anyway, do I really want to say any more about this? Does anyone find it just really distasteful and creepy that a guy who taught your kids about, I don't know, the water cycle and photosynthesis is now using the F word on HBO? It's just very distasteful. And it really shows where this guy's head and heart is at. It's in a dark place, because this is a dark and evil guy, is what he is. Let's see, and he's all for the Green New Deal. He's all for it, yeah. The whole Green New Deal, he says, is just 14 pages long. That's 7 pages shorter than the menu for the Cheesecake Factory. Oh, no, that wasn't, that was John Oliver who said that. That was one of John Oliver's comedy writers who came up with that line after hours and hours of sitting around doing nothing else but writing jokes. Because Bill Nye can't come up with something that pithy off the top of his head. But he is familiar with profanity, and now we're all aware of Bill Nye's familiarity with the use of various vulgarities and profanities. Thank you very much, Mr. Nye. It's what we all suspected all along. Okay, so now we can move on to the domestic tranquility file, where I want to report when I was on Bob Enyart's show on Monday on the radio, the terrestrial radio here in the Denver metropolitan area. I read a post by one of the murderers at the STEM school, the most recent school shooting. And The girl had posted something about missing her father, and I just made the prediction that I'll bet this girl is from a broken home, because, you know, what are the odds? Like, the odds are, it's not a real stretch prediction to make. Anyway, the father of the alleged juvenile transgender STEM shooter is a serial felon. Elvis Quintana, 33, is the father of the Tranny McTranny. We're not going to use her name because we don't want her to have any notoriety. So we're just going to call her Tranny McTranny. And her father was jailed for 15 months for domestic violence against her mother and for menacing with a weapon. McTranny allegedly conducted the shooting at the STEM school, right, with, we'll just call the other killer. We're not going to use his name. We're going to call him Druggy Druggison, and she's Tranny McTranny. And they together shot up the school, and the Breitbart report says that the shooting left one student dead and eight others injured. The shooting is what did it. Not Tranny McTranny or Druggy Druggison. No, it was a shooting. Well, anyway, let's get back to Dad, Elvis. Not Elvis. Jose Evas. I'm a little off my game today. Jose Evas Quintana, Dad, 33 years old, had a string of arrests in Colorado dating from 2008 to 2017. He terrorized the tranny's mother. And then convinced her to marry him in 2009, a year before he was deported. He's admitted to having a history of drinking and drug problems. Sent back to his native Mexico in 2010. Mom and dad were officially divorced in May of 2015. Shocking. Shocking. McTranny, the killer, tweeted to her mother just days prior to the STEM school shooting, "I miss my dad. Can you find him for me?" Well, we found him, and he obviously abandoned and he destroyed this girl's life. He destroyed his family. He destroyed his wife. He destroyed his daughter. And this guy, anyway, the headline, I don't know. Breitbart is obsessed with illegal immigration. I think the illegal immigration angle is the least of the problems in that story. That's the thing that offends me the least about that whole situation, is that the guy was in the country illegally. That's kind of just a technicality, okay? I mean, he destroyed his family and he turned his daughter into a stark, raving lunatic, transgendered murderer. Drove her into the arms of insanity because he's such an evil person. It wouldn't have mattered if he was properly documented. The guy was evil. Just very sad. Very sad story. And not tragic, but evil. It's a sad story about evil people doing horrible things to one another. And that's why there is a hell. That's why there is a hell. People wonder, why would a loving God create a place where he's going to torture people who don't want to be with him? He's going to torture them forever. And they use that as a criticism against God. But God doesn't have to torture anybody for all of eternity. And I'm certain that he is not going to be torturing anyone. He is simply going to leave them to their own devices in a place without him. And they will torture one another, I do believe. I have a feeling hell won't be too much different from earth. Except there will be no rest. There will be no pleasure. There will be nothing good ever at any time. It will only be bad. People will always be after you and ripping you off and hurting you and lying to you and destroying you all the time. And God doesn't even have to be there. In fact, I think the reason it's going to be hell is because he's not going to be there. He's not even going to look in on it. He's just going to leave the people who hate him to themselves. I ain't no sucker. I ain't no fool. Talking about
shake boy.
Yes, we're back. In fact, we have breaking news right now, loaded with breaking news. Bob Barr has apparently made comments about Robert Mueller and Peter Strzok. Let's get Geraldo Rivera and Rudy Giuliani in here. They can break it all down for us, the breaking news. So is it possible now that with the Republicans, Geraldo and Rudy, oh, they're unavailable, I'm sorry. They're not able to come because they're not allowed in the McBurney compound. We have standards around here. Anyway, is it possible that the Trump opera is going to go the other way now? Or I shouldn't say the other way, because I'm convinced both sides are pretty much the same side. I mean, they're all leftists. They're all socialists. But one tries to act like they're conservative once in a while, one side. Now, that side now, it may be going to investigate the other side, the people who actually spied on the Donald Trump campaign. And so the Trump opera could become even more amplified, as it could be even bigger on Election Day 2020 than it was, at its peak crescendo, which, what was the crescendo? I guess it was when the Mueller report came out. I can't believe I'm talking about this. You tune into Hannity and you can get all the news on that. In fact, you can tune into Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Mark Levin, Dennis Prager. Who's the other one who I can't believe has a show, but he does? He used to be a movie critic.
Michael
Medved. I can't believe that guy has a show. Absolutely no talent at all on the air. And the only one worse than him is Hugh Hewitt. There's no way that guy, that proves that someone has the ability to make a deal with the devil. Because someone with that little talent and that annoying of a voice and such an empty, vacuous worldview, to have a show that people actually listen to is embarrassing. So we won't do any of that here because there are approximately 18 other outlets that cover the Trump opera 24/7. Got that all covered. So we'll send Geraldo and Rudy over there where they can get mic'd up and put on the pancake makeup. And meantime, we are going to go to the justice file. We're going to talk about some things that really matter. I talked earlier about why there is a necessity for a place called hell. And another reason is lawyers. So we're going to need a place to keep all the lawyers. And judges, by the way, judges are just older lawyers who have been either elected or elevated to the position of judge. But they're really just lawyers. And they're horrible, terrible people who have wreaked havoc and destruction upon our society ever since, going back about 5,000 years, whenever the first lawyer came along. You could research that. I wonder who the first lawyer had to be in. Probably in Babylon Babel, probably the first lawyer in Ur of the Chaldees. Uh-huh. That's why Abram left, because the first lawyer passed the bar in Ur of the Chaldees. And God looked down, he's like, Abram, you got to get out of there, man. They started with the lawyers, just go. All right, but here's another reason we need hell, is whatever lawyer participated in this, whatever lawyer... It was, Here's what happened out in Las Vegas. According to the New York Post, Kadisha Bishop, 25-year-old woman there in Las Vegas. Well, there's surveillance video of Casita Bishop pushing a 74-year-old man off a bus.
Oh, yeah, I see.
She pushed him from behind. He fell down, and he hit his head. And he died a month later from his injuries. Mm-hmm. And a coroner ruled the death a homicide. Now, the New York Post reports that the surveillance video shows a woman pushing Serge Fournier, 74-year-old guy. Well, if you look at the pictures, it's not just a woman. It is Kadisha Bishop. It's obviously her. It's a video, for crying out loud. So she pushes this old man off the bus. She had been ranting and raving on the bus. She had been yelling and swearing at other passengers. Maybe she had just finished the podcast of Bill Nye's appearance on John Oliver's HBO show, and she just couldn't help herself. So she was just ranting and screaming and cursing at everyone on the bus. And this 74-year-old man told her she should be nice. He said, "You should be nice." And so she pushed him off the bus and killed him. Well, last week she was released on bond after posting $100,000 bond ahead of her preliminary hearing. She's free and walking the streets right now after killing a man. It's just unbelievable. Who's the judge who could possibly let this happen? They don't name the lawyer who presided over this injustice. But that's the beauty of being a judge in America, is you're operating in the shadows and you're not held responsible for anything you do. So she's out. She's out, and the 74-year-old man who asked her to be nice is dead. It's just awful. The video is, it's just shocking to watch. Anyway, but there's the state of justice in America right now. It's not good. Meanwhile, to add insult to injury, Fox News is reporting that a man who told investigators that the 4-year-old daughter of his girlfriend had been abducted has now been arrested in connection with her disappearance. The Houston police are saying that 26-year-old Darian Vents, who had lived with Malia Davis, the missing girl, and her mother, is now been arrested. Blood evidence was found in Vents' apartment that has been linked to the missing girl, Malia, 4 years old. Authorities still have not found the girl. There is surveillance video of Vents. Man. There is surveillance video of him carrying a full laundry basket from his apartment, stuffed with a full garbage bag, as well as multiple bottles of bleach. His bond has been set by a lawyer at $999,999 for some reason. Sure, there's a very creative reason that a bond has been set at $999,999. Malia's mother, the missing 4-year-old girl, Malia, her mother, Brittany Bowens, says that the man who's been arrested in her daughter's disappearance is her former fiancé. Former fiancé. I know what that means, by the way. That's a code word for the guy she was shacking up with at the time. That's former fiancé. Because it is within the realm of statistic possibility that they could have been married at some point. So she says it was her former fiancé. The young girl's mother feels like she failed her daughter. Family members say that she is devastated. And I'm certain she is devastated. Anyway, just another... I just got to move on. Very, very disturbing that... That our governing officials and our spiritual leaders in the church refuse to daily point out the connection between sexual immorality and murder and death. They gloss over it. They don't. It's as if it doesn't even register with them that every day people are detonating in the midst of some situation of sexual immorality, but everyone ignores it and acts as if anyway. Well, we don't ignore it, and it's like the exorcist at the beginning of the program warned about the dangers of temptation. And when you indulge temptation and you take it to its logical conclusion, it's typically sexual immorality, and that leads to murder, death, and bloodshed, and violence is what it leads to. And so you've got your warning right here. I'm not going to warn you about demons, okay? I'm going to let the demons take care of themselves. But as far as temptation, don't indulge it, and don't participate. Because you could put this mother put her child in danger. And her child was actually killed because of the mother's irresponsibility and lust and greed, probably. Just sad and horrible, horrible. So we move from there to the to the domestic tranquility file, where the New York Post is reporting on murderer Thomas Gilbert Jr. Yep, they call him a murderer. In fact, and the reason they call him a murderer is because his mom says she knows her son pulled the trigger, and she's going to testify against him at his upcoming trial. Prosecutors say the son was furious with his father for cutting his $3,000 a month allowance by $200. And of course, the New York Post would focus on the fact that these are relatively well-off people. That really doesn't matter. It wouldn't matter if they were poor or rich or black or white. This is a son who, because of greed, murdered his father. And his mother knows he did it, and she has to testify against her own son now. He shot his dad in his parents' bedroom in the family's apartment. Wow. Gilbert Jr., the son, the murderer, eventually barricaded himself inside the apartment. He was later arrested. Mom says her son was obviously in the throes of a psychotic break and that he's not an evil person. Now, she's talking about the person who shot her husband to death over money. But she says he's not an evil person. I think that's the definition of an evil person. To shoot your own father over money? I can't think of many things more evil than that. But mom says he's not. She says her son was diagnosed with schizophrenia and he's been on medication. She'd been trying to get him to the hospital for 15 years. Oh, yeah, the kid's 30. What, he's got? How old is this kid? He's 30-something years old. Why is he getting an allowance? He's 34 years old. Why is he getting an allowance? That's kind of weird. Anyway, but mom says it's obviously the schizophrenia, the meds, it's a psychotic break. It's anything at all to ameliorate her guilt over the whole situation. She says her son's fragile grip on reality has spiraled even further since he's gone to jail. And we should all feel sorry for her son because now he's in jail because he shot his father to death. Mom says he doesn't belong in jail. He belongs in a hospital. It's what my husband would have wanted for him if he was still here, she said with a straight face, thinking that maybe we all forgot that it was the son who shot and killed him was the reason he's not here, Mom. And Mom, it's you who's suffering from some sort of psychotic break. We all recognize that this is the face of evil. But I do agree with you that he does not belong in jail. Certainly, I agree with that. He belongs in the grave. We'll be right back. Yeah, that's what you need when the whole world seems like it's being ruled by insane lawyers, crazy people, evil people. You need a little Stevie Ray, just scuttlebutting, right? It helps you deal. Helps me deal anyways. Thank you very much, Stevie. We do appreciate it. And now we'll move further into the dark recesses of the domestic tranquility file, where the Chicago Tribune is reporting that a mother and her daughter have been charged in the killing of a 19-year-old pregnant woman, strangling her to death before her baby boy was cut from her womb. Now, listen to how the urinalists at the Chicago Tribune, did you catch that? That little disassociative term that they stuck in there. They said the mother and daughter have been charged in the killing. They have been charged with killing the 19-year-old pregnant woman. But urinalists are taught to never blame anyone for anything, never to use any terms that would imply that anyone is responsible for anything. And I'm sick of it, and I notice it. They were charged with killing this 19-year-old pregnant woman. Let's see. Police say they found a cable that the women used, the mother and daughter used, to strangle Marlon Ochoa Lopez. They found the cable in the same garbage can in which her body was found. Police said the motive for the killing was unclear, but they said we can only assume that 46-year-old Clarissa Figueroa and her daughter Desiree planned to raise the baby as their own. Ochoa Lopez was 9 months pregnant, 19-year-old girl, 9 months pregnant. No husband to protect her. She was so desperate for baby clothes because she didn't have any money and she didn't have a man to take care of her. Oh, is that offensive to imply that a 19-year-old pregnant woman needs a man to take care of her? I apologize if I've offended anyone. But she didn't have a man to take care of her. She didn't have a man to buy her baby clothes. So she answered a Craigslist ad to go get some free clothes. And these women lured her to the Figueroa's home with an offer of a double stroller and baby clothes that Ms. Ochoa's husband should have been. They should have been out shopping for it is what should have happened. But instead, she was desperate. And she was vulnerable. And she was killed. The baby was rushed to Advocate Christ Medical Center. The boy is not well. The hospital says the boy is brain dead. But as of this reporting last Thursday, the baby was still hooked up to life support, placed in an intensive care unit where doctors say that the baby has no brain function, apparently from a lack of oxygen. Just horrible. Awful. And people ask, and people question the wisdom of God in creating a place called hell. When you read a story like that, you understand why we need a place called hell to keep evil people. Now, speaking of evil people, let's go to the politics file where we are going to hear from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And she is going to talk to us about abortion, because she is a passionate advocate for killing defenseless, innocent people. That she is all for killing as many innocent people as she can, especially if they're helpless and cannot defend themselves. Those are the kind of people Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez specializes in killing. I said killing, yes. So I believe that if you advocate for the murder of innocent people, and then that murder actually occurs, then you are guilty. You are an accomplice. So all of you who say that a woman has a right to choose, you're killers is what you are. You're murderers. There's blood on your hands, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has blood on her hands. So she's freaking out about the bill in Alabama and several states now. These so-called heartbeat bills that ban most abortions, if you can detect a heartbeat, except there's always at least one exception. Now, the good news about the Alabama bill and some of the others out there is the lawmakers apparently have come to understand that you shouldn't make an exception for rape and incest. You shouldn't kill a baby because his father's a criminal. That's something that that I and people in my circle of influence have been saying for the better part of 30 years. And maybe they're finally hearing us on it because those exceptions did not make it into these bills. But they did have an exception for the health of the mother, which is a tragedy because... Well, let's get to, so I told you about the bill. We all know what the bills are. The pro-life movement is ecstatic. We're on the verge of banishing abortion in America, you would think, right? And why would the right, the so-called right, the pro-lifers, they call themselves the pro-lifers, why would they be so excited? Well, it's because people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are so freaked out. So they figure we must be winning. Nancy Pelosi's upset. Ocasio-Cortez is upset. Bernie Sanders is upset and offended. Even Joe Biden thinks this went too far. Oh, by the way, Donald Trump tweeted that that goes too far, by the way. Donald Trump has not heard that you shouldn't kill a baby because his father's a criminal, and he says that you should be able to kill babies that are a product of a rape. That's the greatest president since George Washington, by the way, tweeted that the heartbeat bills go too far. Okay, just so we all know where everybody stands. Now, as to Ocasio-Cortez, she says, quote, abortion bans aren't just about, like, controlling women's bodies. They're about, like, controlling women's sexuality. Like, owning women. Religious fundamentalists are working hard to outlaw sex that falls outside their theology, said Ocasio-Cortez. And Ms. Ocasio-Cortez, you are absolutely right. Sex that falls outside of my theology should be against the law. Why, Ms. Ocasio-Cortez? Well, the stories that I've read today are why sex that falls outside of my particular theology should be against the law. Sex should only be sanctioned as legal between one man and one woman in a marriage contract for life. That's the only time it's safe. Any other time, it's dangerous, Miss Ocasio-Cortez. And it doesn't matter that you believe the lie that you can just play with it and toy with it and use it to your advantage when you want to and use it like an amusement park ride. That doesn't matter that that's what you believe. You're an ignorant child. People who are far more, who have far more wisdom than you, Miss Ocasio-Cortez, have established for 5,000 years that adultery and fornication are illegal. And they should be, but they're not under the childlike rule of the lawyers who run the proctocracy here in America. Let's see. What else does Ocasio-Cortez have to say? In her wisdom, she says, she tweeted the following. She tweeted that measures criminalizing the killing of infants expose that a woman's right to receive an abortion, quote, threatens a core element underpinning right-wing ideology, patriarchy. It's a dirty word, patriarchy. That's where fathers take care of their wives and children. That's what patriarchy means. It's where men lead. Men work, men earn, women care for the children, educate the children, take care of the home. That's patriarchy. And it's worked. It works because it's effective. And Ocasio-Cortez hates it. Why? Because she hates God. Who established patriarchy, by the way? It was the living God. That's right. The living God established patriarchy. He even calls himself our Father. And Ocasio-Cortez hates that. She absolutely hates it. She says... it's like a brutal form of oppression to seize control of the one essential thing a person should command, their own body. It's mine. It's mine. So she sounds like a petulant little brat. Somebody took away her Barbie doll. They took away her right to kill innocent, defenseless people. And she's... So, yeah, you think your body is your own, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? You really think that you have... autonomous control of your own body? Well, on the day that gravity pulls you face down upon the earth and you are no longer able to rise, you will have learned the lesson that you do not have autonomous control over your own body. Your body belongs to something much greater than you. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you selfish little brat. And God is going to teach you that lesson, perhaps before you die, and you'll repent and you'll become a decent human being. But more than likely, it will be as he attaches the jet rocket to your back and ties you to the greased pole and points you south and lights the fuse. Yeah, that's probably when you'll get it. And so I just want to say this. I want to get this out there, okay? All of the hoopla and hullabaloo and excitement around these heartbeat bills, I think this whole heartbeat fad, I'm going to call it a fad, it's very reminiscent of the partial birth abortion ban, that whole debate that went on for, I think, 15 years as it wound its way through the courts. Some of you people are probably too young to remember the cultural battle over partial birth abortion. And what actually happened is what's happening right now, and I see it happening. Both sides are going to gin up donations. They're going to get interviews on TV. They're going to get to go on all the shows. They're going to get to talk to famous people. They're going to be all treated as if they're somebody. And I'm talking about the baby killers and the people who want to regulate the killing of babies. You know, the pro-choicers. Both sides are pro-choice, with some exceptions. All right. But this is what I see happening. Another 10 or 15 year process as we go through the courts with these heartbeat bills, with the National Right to Life Committee raising money, and the National Organization of Witches raising money. Both sides, Planned Parenthood, will gin up all kinds of cash. Right? The Conference of Catholic Bishops will send out fundraisers and fund their retirements on this one. This is the next generation of pro-life industry retirees' plan for feathering their nest in retirement. It's called the heartbeat bill. And you know they're hypocritical, because in the bill it says, if you really thought it was a baby, if you really thought it was a person that had a right to life, you couldn't make any exceptions. I mean, do we make any exceptions for other people? I mean, are there times when you can kill an Irish guy because, you know, we understand there are just some certain times when Italians have to be killed. You know, every once in a while, there's a situation in which a black woman, we understand she has to be killed. We don't make any exceptions anywhere else. So this is all just an exercise in politics. And that's why this is from the Pure Politics file. That's where it came, because it's nothing but politics. It's taking the lives of innocent people who can't defend themselves and politicizing them for money, and it's shameful. It's more shameful on the side of the people who want to regulate the killing, in my opinion, than it is on the side of the frothing-at-the-mouth baby killers who come right out and tell you what they want. It's very shameful and sad, but I don't want to end on a downer note, but that's pretty much where we're going to end. Yeah, this is what I predict. Both sides gin up donations. They get on all the shows. They get interviewed on Fox News Sunday. They go on Face the Nation. They're going to do all the shows. They'll get invited on David Letterman. Oh, no, David Letterman's not on the air anymore. They'll go on the late night shows. They'll be famous. And not one innocent person, the death of not one innocent person will be prevented while all this politicking and money-raising goes on. All right, that's it from the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at RealScienceRadio.com, and at AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, I must thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.